This is, in fact, an expression of Jefferson's realization that he lacked the constitutional authority to purchase Louisiana, but a higher good called for it. Now, Jefferson ultimately drops that talk of a constitutional amendment because, as his Republican leaders in the House and Senate point out, you don't really want to raise a constitutional scruple while the Federalists are around. They'll seize on it and charge you with violating the Constitution. So, in fact, no amendment is ever proposed. And perhaps more disturbingly, Louisiana is not governed as a self-governing territory. Rather, it's treated as a foreign province with a federally appointed governor. In this case, a military governor, and federally appointed judges without any legislature. And for some years, this is extremely unpopular in Louisiana, and we'll see at the end, it leads to some thought of conspiracy in creating a new republic in the West. Once again, Jefferson subsumes his mere constitutional quibbles beneath the higher goal of an empire of liberty. And he expresses this after he's out of office to John Colvin. "The question you propose, whether circumstances do not sometimes occur, which make it a duty in officers of high trust to assume authorities beyond the law, is as easy of solution in principle, but sometimes embarrassing in practice. A strict observance of the written laws is doubtless one of the highest duties of a good citizen, but it is not the highest." Well, probably the most glaring contradiction in Jefferson's presidency is that between his libertarian convictions, those expressed wonderfully prior to his holding office, and his beliefs and practices while actually in the White House. Throughout his career, Jefferson had been a champion of the freedom of the press. Once in office, however, he takes a very different tact. I want to read to you at least one passage he made in defense of a free press to Edward Carrington in 1787. "The basis of our governments being the opinion of the people, the very first object should be to keep that right, and were it left to me to decide whether we should have a government without newspapers or newspapers without a government, I should not hesitate a moment to prefer the latter." However, once in office, and once he's the subject of a hostile Federalist press, his tune changes. In his second inaugural address, he states, "During this course of administration, and in order to disturb it, the artillery of the press has been leveled against us, charged with whatsoever its licentiousness could devise or dare. They might indeed have been corrected by the wholesome punishments reserved and provided by the laws of the several states against falsehood and defamation, but public duties more urgent press on the time of public servants, and the offenders have therefore been left to find their punishment in the public indignation." In fact, Jefferson had tried to prompt several governors to silence his opponents in the press. In February 19th of 1803, he wrote an entirely confidential letter to Governor Thomas McKean of Pennsylvania, complaining of the Tory presses. "This is a dangerous state of things, and the press ought to be restored to its credibility, if possible. The restraints provided by the laws of the states are sufficient for this, if applied. And I have therefore long thought that a few prosecutions of the most prominent offenders would have a wholesome effect in restoring the integrity of the presses. Not a general prosecution, for that would look like persecution, but a selected one. The paper I now enclose appears to me to offer as good an instance in every respect to make an example of as can be selected. If the same thing be done in some other of the states, it will place the whole band more on their guard." Well, he also has a similar lack of consideration for due process in the aftermath of Burr's conspiracy, which was a sort of half-baked scheme to incite, presumably, secession in the Western territories. Roughly speaking, this is the story of the conspiracy. It's shrouded in mystery. We don't actually know a lot about it. The testimony we have comes from one of the participants, General James Wilkinson. In 1804, Burr had joined the Federalist Party, was persona non grata within the Republican ranks, and ran for governor in New York. He loses in large part because, again, Alexander Hamilton is active in campaigning against him. In consequence, Burr challenges him to a duel and kills him in New Jersey. So he's wanted for murder in New York, he's on the lam, and he flees to the West. Now, the rest of the story comes from General Wilkinson, and it runs something like this. He's been corresponding with Wilkinson for a while, and in 1806, he and Burr had apparently planned to filibuster Mexico. Filibustering is a great American tradition. It's when you take a small, well, there's two ways of doing it. You can take a group of emigrants, move into a foreign area as new citizens, and then declare that you no longer want to be part of that foreign area, declaim your independence, then join the United States. That's how we got Texas. Another way is to simply put together an armed invasion, invade a foreign territory, and then subsequently turn it over to the United States. That's what Jackson does in Florida, and that's largely what Polk does in Mexico, how we get most of the far west.